coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
The lynching tragedy of 1920 defined the Twin Ports for decades. Now it's been immortalized in music, with the world premiere of a new serious work by a local composer.
I've been thinking about that piece for 20 years. So when Julia Chang just asked me whether I would want to write a piece, I immediately jumped on it. Yet I found it really difficult to finally sit down and write it.
Plus,
I see lilac.
And this is your house here? And are these your lilacs?
They're Persian lilacs.
Celebrating our region's unique extended lilac season. All that after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. With the world-changing events that began just down the road from our area, the death of George Floyd in police custody, and the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, would it be appropriate to stop just briefly and smell the flowers? Frankly, both our frailty made clear by the virus and the centuries of racial injustice epitomized in Mr. Floyd's death, as well as the promise of real change, make this as good a time as any to appreciate the beauty around us. That's particularly so in the Twin Ports, where, I didn't know this, the lilac season lasts longer than you'll find most anywhere else. We'll learn more about that later in the show. For now, though, back to sobering realities. 100 years ago this coming Monday was the most tragic day in the history of the Twin Ports, the lynching of Elmer Jackson, Isaac McGee, and Elias Clayton from a lamppost in downtown Duluth. The men, snatched by a mob, were among six black circus workers falsely accused in the rape of a white woman. As many as 10,000 local residents participated in the horrific murder of the men, which affected the racial history of both Superior and Duluth to the present day. The only city in the nation with a prominent memorial to a lynching at the site of the crime, Duluth also has a permanent memorial committee, which earlier this year had planned to mark the anniversary by drawing 10,000 people to the site, an answer to the same number who participated in the crime. But with the coronavirus, that commemoration was not to be, though the memorial has seen nearly daily smaller events since the death of George Floyd. In March, another commemoration was held, the performance of a newly commissioned trio for piano, cello, and violin by Duluth composer Jean-Rudy Perrault. That, too, was to have had subsequent performances, now also put on hold. But the premiere before a filled auditorium at the College of St. Scholastica, one of the last such gatherings in the region this year, was recorded and lives on. We'll bring it to you in its entirety later in the program. First, from March 13th, my conversation with the composer just days after the premiere. We're joined by Jean-Rudy Perrault, professor and director of orchestras at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and the composer of We Three Kings, a trio for piano, violin, and cello, commissioned by the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee for the 100th anniversary of the lynching in Duluth. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Thank you, Robin. So good to be here.
And it's great to have you in studio following your world premiere of the work at a special concert at the College of St. Scholastica, March 8th, along with two works by William Grant Still. So I want to start with the title, We Three Kings. Of course, we want to honor the three men who were completely unjustly killed by a mob of as many as 10,000. And I want to be clear here, for a crime that simply did not happen.
That is correct.
I can give many references for the event, the most definitive being the book, The Lynchings in Duluth by Michael Fito. And in it and other sources going back to contemporaneous accounts in 1920, a doctor examining Irene Tuscan, who with her boyfriend conspired to say she had been raped by six black circus workers, said flatly that she showed no signs of sexual assault. I want to get that out there because even today we still hear, well, what about the woman who was raped?
Correct.
So your title honors the three men, but the piece more graphically evokes the crime.
Correct. It was hard to find where to begin the piece. I labored over, do I start before the event? Do I start it after the event? Or do I actually just touch on the event? Julia had asked for a 12, 15-minute piece, and I thought I had much more to say than that took the 12, 15 minutes, so I took a little longer. So I'm sure she will forgive me for that.
Right. Julia Chang being the person who made the commission on behalf of the committee to you, and full disclosure, I cannot say enough, my wife.
So I decided to center on the event itself, just a brief preview and a brief postlude, as in, this is what happens, where do we go from here?
Right.
As for the titles, I was struck by three quotes by Martin Luther King, and I used two of them in the score, one being, how long will prejudice blind the vision of man? And the second, in the end, we will not remember the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends.
Right.
Because I started with those three references, I thought, I'm going to name those guys the three kings. Then the constant abuse that some folks in non-white suffer, I said we three kings. So we are part of that persecution as well. We continue to be persecuted in one form or another. So it is about us in a minority and then also being suffering some of what the three men had suffered. Yes, we're not being lynched. At the same time, sometimes it does feel that persecution just gnaws at you.
One other thought about why you did not, or anybody, say much more about them other than their tragic deaths was we simply don't know. Even to this day, we know very little about the men. To my knowledge, I think we still don't really know the spelling of McGee. It's an approximation or something. And we know a little bit about Elmer Jackson because his indirect descendants have come to the fore. We know who they are now. But really, I mean, there's very little we know about them.
Yes, the other reference to we is it was not just the lives of those three men. It had that ripple effect in our whole society. So we are part of that society, and hence the reason for the we three kings.
Right. As we concentrate on the we, I would imagine that one of your goals is for as many people as possible to comprehend what
Correct.
This was all about, to understand the piece. That being said, it is a complicated piece. It's just deconstructed for me.
I thought it important to not forewarn the audience, but give them sort of landmarks to be able to follow the story. Not necessarily for them to enjoy it. I don't care if they enjoy it or not.
Well, this is not an enjoyable event.
Correct,
right?
Exactly. So for them to really understand where I was coming from, and my point of view, and follow along, then it was important to give them certain landmarks so that they can comprehend the message. And
And you do that with the quotations from various works that you cite.
Correct. I use four Negro spirituals. Two are quite well known. One, Amazing Grace, which we all know. And the other, Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child.
One thing I noticed, the pieces that you do quote, they're all a little, I'm sure quite purposely, off. So you have
right.
two or three notes that are the melody we all know, and then the third one is a minor or
correct.
Something way correct. Out there.
Yes, it would be somewhat gimmicky to simply use the full quotes. And I thought, I'm going to
that would be
snippets.
A medley, and we're
right,
not doing
right,
that.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. So I used just a hint. For example, the other piece that I use is that piece by Abel Meeropol, Strange Fruit, and the very opening, this Southern Trees Bear Strange Fruit,
right?
Which to me is haunting.
And again, it's not literal. We're not talking about a southern tree. We're talking about a very, very northern, about as far north as you can go, lamppost.
Correct.
Right.
Although at some discussion mentioned that Duluth is the northernmost southern city. That struck me. That I think I did not understand that until Henry Banks told me about the lynching.
And you mentioned that to the audience in your opening remarks, that when you moved to town 20 years ago, you're originally from Haiti and then from New York, no one gave you a little guidebook saying that the lynching had happened.
Correct, right? Correct. And I think Henry Banks really for pointing it out way before anybody else told me.
Heidi Bach Hansen, the co-founder of the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial. Right?
He told me, I'm not sure why, but at the same time, certain notes began to float in my head. And this was way back. This is 17 years ago.
Maybe you've been writing this then for a long time.
I've been thinking about that piece for 20 years. Mm. So when Julia Chang just asked me whether I would want to write a piece, I immediately jumped on it because I have been thinking about that piece for a long time. Mm-hmm. Yet I found it really difficult to finally sit down and write it. Faced with the actual theme, faced with what am I doing here? What is the purpose of this? I found it really hard to write. Mm-hmm. We struggled through, the family did, my wife and the kids, when we're there, they left me alone in my dark place, and I wrote it. I had so much to say, and I think in my talk during the concert, I said more than I wanted to say musically.
Right.
There was not enough time for me to say all of that musically, so I thought important. Just to make my feelings, my thoughts heard, because if I had to put all that into music, we would still be sitting there.
We are talking to Jean-Rudy Perrault, the composer of We Three Kings, the piece commissioned by the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee for the 100th anniversary of the Duluth lynching. One part of the piece that leaves nothing to the imagination is in the cello, which is the rope swinging. First of all, is there a word for that technique?
Well, it's an extended technique.
This is a scratching of the horsehair or the bow. You can hear this like anything.
Well, actually, what the cello does is to not put the bow on the string, but rather under the string, between the right on the body itself. And those of you string players, you may want to try this.
Or not. You don't want to ruin
It is quite the sound. It actually does not ruin the instrument.
Okay.
You might get a bit more rosin on the wood, which you just clean it up. Mm-hmm. But if you roll the bow with the hair on the body, it makes that god-awful sound of wood cracking. In the trio, it is the reference of neck snapping, as the man just let down from the rope, the neck just separates from the rest of the body, and the other visual is on the piano at that point, where the pianist is going from the lowest chords to some of the highest chords, so it's that swinging back and forth of the low chords and then high one. And that, again, it's a visual of the body is just swinging. Right at that point, the violin is also playing a very dissonant Amazing Grace. It's eerie. Mm-hmm. Well, I shouldn't say it myself.
This is obviously wrenching and emotional. What do you do to recover from writing a piece like this?
Well, I need to decompress a little. Some of you who know me can hear that my voice has probably gone down an octave. It is because of the journey. I'm finally relaxing, and I need some time to decompress. I'm going to need a lot of time to decompress.
Right. Great. We've been speaking with Jean-Rudy Perrault, the composer of We Three Kings, commissioned by the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee for the 100th anniversary of the lynching in Duluth. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Robin.
During last weekend's rehearsals, I spoke with the three musicians who performed it, pianist Sam Black, violinist Laurie Bastian, and cellist Josh Airy.
I'm Laurie Bastian, violinist.
Josh Airy, cellist.
Sam Black, I am the pianist, and together we call ourselves the Gichigami Trio. Rudy has always been kind of demanding. He lets you know when you made mistakes. He has a plan how he wants it to go.
Is that intimidating, or are you just the best of friends?
We're good friends, and I'm quite a bit older.
This particular piece needed a lot of shaping. You couldn't just sit down and play it. We had to work it through. And because Josh came in from out of town, we didn't have a lot of opportunity to rehearse, which maybe was a good thing because we started feeling certain ways and tempos, and then Rudy came in and, well, I'd prefer it this way. So it really was a work in progress.
Yeah, it's so fascinating and rewarding, I find, to work on new music in general and in Rudy's music in particular. Not only is it, you know, tied to today and to the commemoration and moment in our history, but it's tied back 100 years too, of course, to 1920 and the lynchings. And as we've discovered the music together through rehearsal, we've also discovered some of Rudy's ideas about certain parts, what they represent, what certain sounds mean, what some of the narrative is behind his music. And that's been a remarkable journey because he did not share that with us when he sent the score and the parts. So it's come from his mouth and little by little over the course of the past week or so as we've rehearsed.
You're saying some of the sounds that you could not immediately identify.
Yeah, there are some special effects, probably is the best way to say it in this piece especially. There are what we call false harmonics in the strings, which give a really eerie double octave sound.
Laurie and I identified one theme that seems like it comes from a lullaby by Brahms. Well, no, it comes from another spiritual, but there are at least three other spirituals in there by titles that Rudy knew and was familiar with and incorporated them, but until we talked with him, we didn't know that.
Yeah, I think like the great composers, of which I would count Rudy one, you know, he molds and melds the pieces, not necessarily a whole phrase even, to his will. It's not just the tune, it has a place in the narrative, so to speak, of the music itself.
It's deeply emotional piece of music. Even the harsh spot, the choice of harmonies, and there's only two, I'm only playing two notes at a time, even though quickly, but his choice of what those two notes are and when they agree with each other and when they clash adds to incredible amount of irony that just pervades every page of this piece.
That was pianist Sam Black, violinist Laurie Bastian, and cellist Josh Airy discussing their world premiere performance of Jean-Rudy Perrault's trio, We Three Kings. We'll have the broadcast premiere of the work after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. The College of St. Scholastica's Mitchell Auditorium played host to the March 8th world premiere of Jean-Rudy Perrault's piano, violin, and cello trio, We Three Kings. It was commissioned by the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee for the 100th anniversary this June of the triple lynching in Duluth. Here in its broadcast premiere is that performance. Thank you. You've just heard the broadcast premiere of Jean Perrault's Piano, Violin, and Cello Trio, We Three Kings, commissioned by the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial Committee for the 100th anniversary this June of the triple lynching in Duluth. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hey, Robin.
So as we noted, with the performance of Rudy Perrault's stirring composition, the 100th anniversary of the Clayton Jackson McGee tragedy is Monday. And I understand there's actually a new development in the case. Brooks?
Yes, Max Mason could be receiving Minnesota's first posthumous pardon today. Max Mason was one of the black circus workers who was accused of the rape of a white woman in Duluth in 1920. Three other men were lynched on that allegation, which was found to be unproven and had no evidence ever occurred. But Max Mason was convicted and sentenced to 30 years in prison, but was released in 1925. 5 years after he was sent to prison and was told never to come back to Minnesota. Now, 100 years later, the Governor Tim Walz, Attorney General Keith Ellison, and Supreme Court Chief Justice Lori Gildea will decide if he is able to receive that pardon.
Wow. Well, I don't think I'm going out on too much of a limb to say 100 years too late. And here we are 100 years later, and another racial injustice that's pretty close to loco is rocking the nation. The death of George Floyd while in police custody in Minneapolis. There have been ongoing protests in Duluth and Superior. Danny?
Right, Robin. Last week, there were more than 200 people that gathered at Superior's Government Center to protest the death of George Floyd. And community activists like Kim Young with the Superior African Heritage Community spoke, as well as Stefan Witherspoon with the Commission on Communities of Color. He's the chair of that. And they actually met this week, that body, to discuss future policy initiatives to address some of the issues that we've been seeing related to these protests.
And while all that is happening, the COVID-19 pandemic hasn't gone away. So more developments on that?
Yeah, this week, too, another round of COVID-19 testing kicked off in Red Cliff. There are three rounds of testing in northern Wisconsin because officials want to gauge the prevalence of the disease up here following, you know, the striking down of the Safer at Home order in Wisconsin. I think there's been a lot of concern in northern Wisconsin among residents about tourism and people coming up to visit, whether it's second homes or seasonal homes, and how that could potentially impact the spread of the disease, or if people in the community are spreading it asymptomatically. So they're doing this another round of testing with the Wisconsin National Guard to try and determine where things are at right now.
Well, testing is one thing, but Brooks, I understand, and Graham Murray, they've taken a different approach. I think you can say is back to nature. You got to tell us about this.
Well, someone or a group of people cut down a tree earlier this week to block Highway 61, both lanes. Supposedly, the sheriff said, to keep COVID-19 from spreading into Cook County, where Grand Marais, Lutzen, and Grand Portage are along the North Shore.
Not to keep the disease from going up the road, but to keep the tourists from bringing it, correct?
Right. There is some concern among locals that COVID-19 will be imported by tourists who are increasingly willing to visit as the pandemic appears to plateau in Minnesota and as more businesses start to reopen. Until this week, Cook County did not have a case of COVID-19, one of the last counties in Minnesota to not have one. But just after this story went up, an infected person was identified, a male resident of the county in his 30s. So now only Lake of the Woods County in Minnesota, the only place where a COVID-19 case has not been documented. No reports yet that anyone has put any trees on the highways just yet.
Well, they do have a few up there, so in case they... Right. Well, our rural residents certainly know how to make the forest work for them. We've been speaking with Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
You can read these stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/North Report, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. We've also been joined by my colleague, Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And finally today, the road-blocking pines and great oaks of Grand Marais aren't the only woody species in the news. Since April, it's been lilac season in the Twin Ports, and apparently one of the longest in the world. Joining me by phone and on the hunt for lilacs in Superior is Linda Nervick, who's coordinating the Lilac Love Fest in the region. Hello, Linda. Where are you and what are you looking at?
I am out and about, and I'm on the hunt for lilacs. I am right now located on Cummings Avenue, which is right as you come off the High Bridge from Duluth, and I'm at Average Joe's parking lot.
Okay, and does Average Joe's have average lilacs or something special?
This collection is far from average. They're a big, beautiful white lilacs and purple lilacs. These are the classic lilacs that you see around town.
Well, before we get into interviewing these lilacs, I'm sure they have a lot to say to us. Tell us about this. How long is the season?
The lilac season goes from mid-May till mid-July here in the Twin Ports.
But you started out in April, is that correct?
We announced the event in April.
Okay. And that's longer than elsewhere? Why is that?
Well, the Twin Ports has many microclimates. You have the outskirts of the area, which can be 91 degrees, and then you have the Big Lake, where it can be 52 degrees at the same time. And with that span, we can have different growing seasons for the lilacs.
Mm-hmm. And what's it normally, if there's such a thing as normal in other areas?
Normal would be about 3 weeks for lilac season in the Twin Cities, for instance.
Hmm. And you're looking at lilacs at Average Joe's, or is it somebody's house? How did they get there?
Well, it is on someone's property behind this big, beautiful fence. And how did they get there? That's a very good question, because lilacs are not wild. They have to be planted. So when you're looking at a vacant lot and there's a giant lilac, there's a good chance that there was a homestead there and someone maybe had planted their lilacs in the turn of the century, last century.
And so this one stands out?
They're all waving in the wind here. I'm going to go count 1, 2, 3, 4. There looks to be about 15 different lilacs. And this one has the purple, white. The purple is the most fragrant of the lilacs. The darker the purple, the stronger the fragrance. And the thing that's interesting about the white is they usually pop out first.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here comes someone. I'm going to talk to them. I think he's the owner of this house. I have a quick question. We're recording this for Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Linda from the Lilac Love Fest. And what is your name?
Peterson, George Peterson.
George Peterson. And this is your house here?
Right there.
Right here. And are these your lilacs?
Probably planted around when the house was built, and that was in 1888. They're Persian.
Persian lilacs?
Yeah, they're old. They're an old variety. Then I got the double lavenders, double reds, double whites, all French. Then I have one in there. called the Abraham Lincoln. And it's supposed to be the nearest to true blue, and it is.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it's a beautiful house, and your lilacs are gorgeous.
Aren't they nice?
They are. That's awesome. Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing your lilac hunt, Linda Nervick.
Thank you. And you can find out all kinds of information on lilaclovefest.com.
We will certainly do that. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. With the weather forecast predicting a sunny weekend, we'll leave you with this report by Carmen McRae, just in case. Stay safe, everyone.
I see lilacs in the rain, and you are with me again. When April sprinkles her dreams in my heart, when we parted in the lane, the skies were tearful with rain. The scent of lilacs remained in my heart.